Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Men's Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you one of our legacy shows, The Pep Talk with John Carl Pepe. Greetings and welcome, John. How are you tonight?
I am very good, Hercules. How are you?
I'm doing awesome, and I'm looking forward to your show.
Yes, it's going to be a good one tonight. Yeah, a little bit of a news here in our household. Just for the last couple months, we had been feeding this cat that's been living in our outdoors. And then I just found out on Monday, I noticed that one cat is now six. So it was a...
Wow.
We started calling her Bitewing because she's got this cool little mask. And she has five kittens. They're doing very well, which reminds me that... guests on the Pep Talk will receive a kitten as a thank you for being on the show. So if you're a guest of the show, just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, write kitten, do not bend, and then you'll get your kitten in the mail. All right. So look, it's July 4th weekend, Sunday, July 2nd, 2023. And as we approach, as we march into Independence Day, we have our regular Sunday, first Sunday of the month edition of the Pep Talk. And my guest tonight, I'm very, very happy to have him here. He has been a friend for over 30 years, and for the last 30 years has embarked on a journey of navigating the world of professional acting, as well as being an educator, and is now a father. This is a man who has inspired me in many ways over the years, and has been has provided shelter for me and when I needed it, and has just kind of always been there. And one of the one of those people that you always know that they're there, even if time and tide gets in the way and you don't always get to talk as much as you do. But he is the Indiana Jones to my Salah. He is the Sheriff Brody to my Hooper. He is the John to my Ringo. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Pep Talk. I give you Brian Robert Scambotti, actor, teacher, father, and friend. Brian, bro, welcome. Welcome to the Pep Talk.
Thank you. I was actually calling about the air supply tickets. Is this hot 95?
I don't know about the tickets, but how about a kitten? You want a kitten?
I would love a kitten.
Do that.
My blushing bride, unfortunately, is allergic to cats, although, maybe we can work something out. I don't know. They sound cute.
Yeah, we'll talk. We'll talk after the show. Brian, thank you for making the journey out to the base of Mount Olympus here in our modest little studio. I trust the Sherpas were good to you. No complaints.
They were. I crossed their palms with silver, and they got me where I needed to get. So that was good.
Okay, because they could be a little handsy.
Yes. No, I noticed that. Yeah. I noticed that. But I just thought that was a cultural thing, so, I didn't make a big stink.
Okay, We'll talk after the show also about that. All right. So, Brian, as I said, 30 years ago, you graduated high school.
Easy now. Okay. Yes, I did. I don't know if the general public needs to know that, but yes, you're right.
Okay, gotcha. I did. But because I say that because you crossed the threshold from being a person who was doing, who was acting as, as a thing to do in high school. And then you made that decision that this is going to be your career path and this is what you are going to pursue. And then that is when you were, you had that last summer and then you went into Wagner College, Collegium Wagnerium. And, and that sort of opened you, that was your first step into a much larger world. So let's start at the beginning. Let's start at what got you into acting and what led you to make that decision. This is what you were going to pursue.
Well, that's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it. So little tip to those of you who might be doing some teaching. When you aren't quite sure how to answer a question, tell a student, that's a really good question, and I'm glad you asked it, because it gives you a minute to vamp. It's just funny that you should mention the whole inspiration thing. You kindly said in a way that I kind of gave some inspiration to you, but it's funny because, oddly enough, it works very much both ways, because I had always had an interest in performing and in acting and in, you know, that kind of stuff. But it was actually going to see Guys and Dolls, which was a show at our beloved alma mater, Ramapo High School, with our good friend and, in fact, past guest of your show, Bart Capuano, where you appeared. I believe the character's name is Liver Lips Louie. Is that correct?
No, I think it was just The Drunk. At least in the script
right.
that I was given.
Okay, all right. Yes. I think Liver Lips Louie is one of the guys. And you were clearly a drunk guy. And just seeing you up there and having such a good time watching you, I just remember me and Bart just laughing through the whole show and loving that part when you came on, it sort of made it real and accessible for me in a way that it hadn't been. So, you know, I had done things with Bart, as we know, Bart, our wonderful friend, outlawed DIY filmmaker, Bart Capuano that he is. And you know, I worked on movies and things with him, backyard, camcorder, odysseys with him. And I had done little school plays here and there in elementary school and middle school and things like that. But the big leagues, the high school shows, that's something that I just didn't feel was anything I could tackle. And it just seemed so kind of outside my wheelhouse. And then seeing you up there just really broke the ice for me. I was like, John's up there. He's having a good time. You know, maybe this love that I have of making those movies in the backyard with Bart and, you know, playing, you know, role-playing type games in the backyard with friends since I was a wee lad, maybe this is something that I could actually do on a more serious level. And it was funny seeing you do that, a good friend up there who wasn't like a theater geek, you know, I affectionately use that term. I am a theater geek, so I can say that. but like, you know, you were this, you know, charming kind of athletic, handsome fella up there, just having a good time. And I was like, John's doing it. Maybe I can do it too. And it was that very night, in fact, under the sort of guidance and encouragement of our stalwart then student council president, Kevin O'Donnell, terrific guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all were going to see you backstage, I guess. And I had a little conversation with Kevin, and he was like, man, you really seem to love this stuff. Why don't you audition for On Stage this summer, which was our summer theater program back home? And I was like, I couldn't do that. What do you mean I couldn't do that? And he's like, I think you should. I think you really, you know, because I was such a nerd, man, that like I went in the day after they closed the show into the darkened auditorium at Ramapo High School. And I don't know if you know this, stop me if you heard this one before, fished out of the garbage can the lobby board. With the pictures of all the cast members and little stills from the performance, and I took them home. I took them off like the red cardboard paper that it was on and did, you know, little notes on the back of each one about what was going on in the show. And, like, I was hooked. I was hooked. You know what I'm saying? I just was hooked. And I had been a theater lover from, you know, a pretty early age. Just my parents had encouraged it and had taken me to see shows like Cats and Les Mis and The Phantom of the Opera. Always as a spectator, you know, and it was honestly seeing you up there and just being like, I could do that too. And then the encouragement of some folks like, you know, Kevin and some other folks that were in that show, I auditioned for On Stage and got a lead lead role as Daddy Warbucks and Annie. And, you know, the rest was kind of history, and started doing those shows and got to know our stalwart theater director and teacher, Doug Gipple, who I see just commented in our Facebook thread, which makes me very happy.
Yes. Yes.
And just in that inimitable Doug Dry style, just, you know, kind of just dropping that bon mot there. That was very funny. And, you know, getting to work with Doug and the encouragement that he gave me the sort of courage, really, to pursue a theater degree at Wagner. And then I was a double major in theater and English. And that's kind of where the journey began.
Great. Yeah. Doug was the first, I think, person that I encountered that taught me that acting is an art form, right?
Yeah.
I was a little secret about the Guys and Dolls. I want to be on stage and be an actor. I kind of think I did it because I had a crush on a girl that was in the show.
Oh, okay.
And there was no craft involved in playing the drunk. I had one line. I did everything you shouldn't do. I upstaged. I ad-libbed. It was just, you know, the me that also did go, you know, go to school for acting and learn it as a craft. And again, it was Doug that really set that. And
yes.
And really set us on that path. And Doug just retired recently from teaching, and
I know.
And I would like to have him on the show because I think he could tell some great stories about being a theater teacher, you know, and living in that
Heck
world,
yeah.
and an actor as well, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And when I was, you know, considering going for a theater major, I remember talking to Doug and saying, you know, Doug, what do you think? Do you think I could do this? And he said, he said something to the effect, I think you've got the talent. You just have to decide if you've got the commitment.
Yeah.
And yep. truer words were never spoken, because commitment is, again, something that without it, there's no chance in this business. You just have to commit to it. You got to do everything you can, and you've got to throw yourself into it, and you make sacrifices, and that's, you know, we can get into that, but that's a part of it too. And that sort of encouragement from Doug is something that really gave me the sort of lift under my wings, and started to pursue it at Wagner. And then I was a double major in theater and English, because I always had that other love in literature. And that is also, in a way, a sort of like idea of keeping the options open, right? In case this whole acting thing doesn't work out. You know, you've heard, how many times have you heard that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sort of had that in the back of my mind as, well, okay, that maybe I could teach English or something like that. I could be in that world and stuff. And over the course of my 4 years at Wagner, I sort of was like trying to get up the courage to really pursue this as a career. Cause you know, we didn't know anybody really that did it. I didn't grow up among professional actors or anything like that. And it wasn't a part of my world. So it was very scary. And I just remember when it came time to graduate, being really scared, like could I do this? And I wasn't sure. And you know, I decided I needed to go to grad school, because although the training at Wagner was good, it wasn't as good and as cohesive as it is now. And I felt that I needed that extra training. I needed that MFA. And so it was, even just committing to that, it was scary, because it's like, gosh, what does this mean? Am I going to be sleeping on the streets? Do you know what I mean? It was intimidating. And I think you might remember, I worked on a master's in English Lit for a year after I graduated, which was kind of the academic equivalent of treading water. It wasn't really towards anything except to just sort of like get my parents off my back, A, and B, just kind of continue my studies in some fashion. But I think it was probably by September or October of that first year of graduate school in English Lit that I was already applying again to grad schools to go to acting school. And luckily enough, got into UC San Diego and went out there for my MFA, and that really was the entree that I had into that, as Mr. Kenobi put it, into that larger world, right? It was that, oh man, this is it. You know, this is my way in. I was lucky enough to get into that great school, and that allowed me to embark on the career that I've had.
Yeah. That's now for people who don't know MFA, it stands for Mother Effing Actor.
Correct.
And you know, it's funny because you know, I remember having the same conversation with Doug, and I know having that conversation with you as well back then.
Sure.
Yeah, this is something we should do, and I think I wound up independently also auditioning for Wagner, and I think getting accepted, and we even talked a little bit about being roommates.
Yes, that's right.
That probably would have destroyed the friendship had it happened.
Absolutely,
but,
and probably destroyed the college as well. It's just been smoldering wreckage.
Which, you know, I think you were able to do a few years later when we were doing a bar movie. And,
yes.
So I wound up going to Adelphi, famously the Harvard of Long Island. and I always, when I see somebody, when I meet someone who goes to Harvard, I'm like, oh, the Adelphi of Massachusetts. that was their tagline, the Harvard of Long Island. And it still is to this day. And, you know, so it's funny because your 4 years of learning to be an actor in New York, you know, I think encouraged you and bolstered your desire to be an actor in New York. But you wanted to kind of go out west and taste that for a little bit too before eventually deciding not to come back. My time, you know, which was very valuable, and I loved what I learned about acting and the craft and the art and the commitment to being an actor. But I realized after that 4 years of learning to be an actor in New York, I didn't want to be an actor in New York. I still wanted to do acting, but I didn't necessarily want to be in New York. And that's where I wound up going to Burlington, Vermont. After college, and did a bunch of acting there, you know. And again, it's funny that you give me the credit for Guys and Dolls and the inspiration there, because when I saw you and Annie, I was inspired to take this seriously and be like, oh, this is a thing, like this is good, you know. And you know, my father always encouraged it as well. He always made sure, you know, he took me to a lot of plays, musicals, and straight theater, as they call it, and always encouraged that, and I, you know, definitely, you know, knew I wasn't going to be an athlete in the family, and you know, and so really was like, he was like, yeah, that's you're good at it, go do it. You know, one of the things also with Wagner was that was a musical theater heavy school, and definitely more suited for your talent, because the two things that I always thought you had on me as an actor, besides the actual talent and acting part of it, was your height and your singing ability. Because I am short and I cannot sing, so I was like, oh, Adelphi, they don't do musicals. I'm going to go there, and sure enough, they started doing musicals when I went.
Oh, of course.
But, you know, as far as being supported and encouraged, you know, both of your parents were, you know, as when it came to acting, were very encouraging and excited for you. And I remember having a conversation on the phone with your mom where she was telling me how excited and how much fun you were having rehearsing Annie, and that she was just like, I think this is might be a thing. And, you know, she was really like, she was over the moon about it. You know, she was really excited that you were doing this and that you were having fun doing it. She also told me they tried the bald cap, about how they tried the bald cap, and it just was awful.
Didn't work. Yeah.
Humid, hot summer theater, right?
Just not good. Yeah, not good.
Yeah. But it's
we tried
but,
it.
Know,
we gave it a shot. Yeah, I was a younger. I was a silver fox, as Daddy Warbucks.
Ah, that's
before,
right. Yep.
Before all the stress causes the hair to fall out. Yeah, yeah.
Which what telegraphing Jamie Foxx later on playing the role.
Correct.
Fox, Jamie Foxx, right?
Absolutely.
And it, you know, it's funny because, you know, Bart was always, I felt, the first one to leap forward, right? The first one to push us to leap forward too, you know, because I would always hear stories about Bart in Magellan, you know, and how great and how fun he was doing that. And you know, so yeah, so Bart.
We should explain to the listeners. Magellan was our eighth grade play at Eisenhower Middle School. Yes, and Bart played some kind of a mafioso figure. He was very fun.
Yes, brother, can you spare a dime? Right? Was that his song?
Uh,
I, rem- And that might have been someone else. Bart, it's funny, we talked about it on the very first, the pep talk with Bart.
Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, actually, if we want to get really into the weeds, goes back to, I believe we were in fifth grade, and we had this guy, Mr. Thompson, come into Lincoln School, who was a real musician. He was a serious musician. He was probably, you know, if you looked him up, probably a very successful session musician, something like that, and a really fine educator. And he only taught at Lincoln 1 year because I think he couldn't hack, like, dealing with little kids who couldn't really do what he wanted to do. But he had this whole Odyssey Through the American Songbook show that he created and directed, and one of our classmates did sing Brother, Can You Spare a Dime. It was not Bart, though.
It was not Bart. I think Bart also expanded on that, too. Because I wasn't there for any of that. I met you guys as we were going into high school. I won't say
here.
So.
Yeah, no, let's keep that out, shall we?
We'll edit the other part out at the beginning.
It's a matter of public record. It's okay.
So you go out west, and
yes.
You are at UCSD, and mm-hmm. What was that like, and what was going on out there?
Well, you know, it was the hardest 3 years, but it was also the most rewarding 3 years probably I've ever had. The training was impeccable. It was completely immersive. I mean, you just ate, slept, breathed acting and theater all day long every day, and you were in rehearsal at night. And the training, the professors that I got to work with were just, they were a dream. They were wonderful and supportive, but they challenged you and they made you work your butt off, and they never accepted sort of just good enough from you.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that you had more to give, and they pushed you. They pushed you in a way that I had never been pushed before, but I was so thrilled to be there and so thrilled to be taking that journey. And I mean, UC San Diego is nestled in La Jolla, which is just this beautiful, beautiful place. You never really got to see much of it because you're always in a darkened theater, but it was just such a magical place to go to school and to live for those years and kind of experience that Southern California lifestyle, which was one that I kind of really was craving. I had sort of had my fill of the East Coast and the pace and the, you know, sort of dog-eat-dog of it all. And so going out to work on something which was so challenging and demanded so much in a place that was just so mellow and so beautiful and so cool and kind of, you know, we, as I think, you know, guys growing up on the East Coast that are interested in a certain kind of music and a certain kind of art and stuff like that, we kind of, I think, lionize the West Coast in a way, and that California mm-hmm. lifestyle, at least I did. I, you know, wanted to experience that at least one time in my life. And it was a really, really special time. And taking that leap is one that was scary because, again, I was leaving everybody I knew and everybody I loved and going across the country and coming back to our good pal Bart. You know, he really did encourage me and said, you got to go for this, man. And so did mm-hmm. my dad, who, you know well. Unfortunately, we lost my dad back in 2019. Going to be 5 years, hard to believe. But he was incredibly supportive, and he said, let's just go, let's check it out. You know, let's see some shows out there, you know, and see what they're doing at the school. And I was like, all right, let's go. And we went out, we checked it out. I was like, I'm staying. And we called Bart. We said, hey, Bart, here's the deal. If you and my mom pack up my car with all my stuff and you drive it across country for me, you can stay as long as you want. And you can hang out. And again, that sort of, you know, legend of going out west that was really very true for us at that time. And Bart wanted that too. He came out, drove my car. He was there in like 3 days. He slept in the car. You know, it was amazing. Brought all my stuff and stayed. And then he went back for his dog, Maggie, and brought her back. And then he stayed mm-hmm. for years. But that made a big difference too. To have a great friend out there made a huge difference for me in terms of just having a support system. So it was a really magical time. It really was.
Yeah. I want to touch on your father because you did mention him, and I would did want to bring this up because, boy, talk about being supportive, not just of but of your friends as well. Like what he was willing to do for Bart, or how he would take you guys to come and see me at Adelphi, because he wanted to see what I was doing as well.
He sure did.
And just, I mean, just an amazing man to the end. And, always put on a brave face on anything and always, challenged ahead and had a scientific mind. Your father helped our country achieve some phenomenal things outside of this earth, right?
For the listeners, my father was an aerospace engineer who worked on a lot of different stuff over the course of his life, but in the sort of latter years of his career was working on the Hubble Space Telescope program as well as the Space Shuttle program, working on the guidance systems for those spacecraft. So, he was somebody who kind of always had one of the most brilliant minds, if not the most brilliant mind I've ever encountered. And much to his chagrin, I'm terrible at math and science, always have been. But he never minded. He was a true patron of the arts. He loved theater, genuinely loved theater, and was so supportive of my work and going into this crazy profession, which was so different from what he had done. He had, right out of college, he had gotten a job, had the same job with a company that had changed hands many times over the years, but his whole life he worked for the same job, essentially. And he had that stability. He had that sort of normal life thing that I was not going to have going into acting, and he knew that, but he was incredibly supportive anyway and said, if this is what you want to do, let's do it and go to the best school you can and get the best training you can. Give yourself every edge that you can and really take this thing by storm. And he did, and his support, I mean, he flew across the country. He saw every show I ever did, it was incredibly important to me to have that support. And I know you lost your father as well, and it's different when you lose your dad. It changes things.
It is, and then even your father, made a point to be there for me as well during that time. Another thing I also got from your father was the love of cats. I think he was one of the first first times I really was like, oh, cats are great. Cats are, don't hate me. Like, they're cool, And it was always very, very supportive there when, when my cats passed too, getting a card from him, and always taking pictures of the shows, which is fantastic. And
they make those shows look much better than they actually were. They look like significant summer stock productions. It's great.
It's funny because someone else that we also went to high school with and performed with, Constantine Maroulis, was on American Idol, and there was a point in his show, in his segment, right, a little whatever they do, right, where they talk about the person, they show pictures from their past, and there's a picture of him from a show that we were in together, Lend Me a Tenor, a great show that can never be done ever again.
Never spoken of again, yes.
Aspect of the plot, but I think with historical context and a bit of an introduction, I think it's passable.
Well, I don't know if you know, but Ken Ludwig has gone back and revised Lend Me a Tenor.
Interesting.
And instead, so instead of doing Othello, they're doing Pagliacci.
With the clown mask. Okay, I'm there. I'm down.
There you go.
But I think every production of the clown mask needs to use the one from the Pagliacci clown mask from the 1966 Batman series, The Joker's Wild, I think, which Christopher Nolan also used the bank robbery mask the Joker wears in The Dark Knight.
The first time we see him, right? That's the first glimpse we get of him.
And it's the same mask, the same design.
Yeah. So Ludwig has very wisely, because, you know, that was a cash cow for him, that show.
Yeah.
He went back and has made that change. And
so,
I think that's
good on him. That's
yeah.
better.
Yeah.
That works
that's
better.
That's the right thing to do.
So there's this great picture your father took of me and Constantine together. And I remember watching American Idol, and it was a bit where what they were saying was not what the show was, right? I think the line they were saying, which was great, is like, as Constantine grew up, he was very devout and active in his religious community. And it was this picture of him as this character, Max, who was very nerdy, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's the picture they used. And it was cut perfectly in half, so it was just him and not my half of it. But, you know, your dad's picture made it to national television there.
Love that. Yeah, I remember that, as well it should. I mean, the guy was my father was a wonderful photographer. He was very interested in it. He read popular photography. He had a subscription for many years. And, I mean, our family albums are just replete with all these wonderful photographs that he took. And he really had an eye. And if you look at all of these production stills, and I've kind of been going through them a little bit. I went through them, as you know, looking for a picture of us from Brigadoon, one of the shows we did in high school for the logo, for the poster, if you will, for tonight's show. And just looking back, it's like, wow, my dad just took such amazing production stills because, again, he loved photography. And it was his hobby. He was really into it.
Yeah. And you know, and he loved what you were doing and – and it's funny you said you didn't inherit his math skills and his science aptitude, but you did. You inherited his analytical mind, right? His tenacity, commitment to the craft, because you definitely approach your craft like a scientist, very disciplined and diligent about it. And you were, and very exact in how you approach it. Your swagger, you got your dad's swagger, no doubt about that.
I would say yes. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So after the 3 years at UCSD, you decide to come back to New York, correct? Am I getting that right?
So here's the thing. Did I decide? Yes, I did. I really wanted to go to L.A. and become a movie star. So when we finish our three-year program at UCSD, we have a showcase, as many schools do, right? So we just got out of showcase season. We just did our Wagner showcase for the kids and everything. And this is something that happens for schools all across the country. Now, UCSD, for whatever reason, I don't know if they still do, but at the time, when I graduated in the early 2000s, we would showcase with the Yale School of Drama in Los Angeles. I don't know why, but this is something that had been going on for many years. And then in New York, we would showcase by ourselves, but in LA, we would showcase with Yale. And so, you know, I remember going up to this little theater. I was like on Santa Monica Boulevard or wherever it was, and doing our showcase. We were showcasing with Yale. It was very exciting. And Henry Winkler was there because he's a Yale guy, and he apparently goes to the showcase every year to support the kids, to support the grad students who are coming out of the MFA program. And we kind of got to meet him, and he was really gracious and nice. And it's funny because my dad kind of bore a passing resemblance to Henry Winkler, particularly as they both grew older. You know, so it was just kind of a nice moment to have the Fonz sort of give us his best before we went in to do our showcase. And
Brian, if I might interject, as you know, and I've talked about this on the show before, as a young Italian American male growing up in a certain era, we'll say, we had three icons. It was Sylvester Stallone,
yep.
Lou Ferrigno, and Henry Winkler.
Yeah,
100%. Those were our three Italian American icons. He gets because of Fonzie, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, it's funny because I just remember being struck by Henry Winkler's kindness and thinking, you know, we're the other school. We're not the kids he's here to see. But he was just so magnanimous and cool. And in that Yale class, was the great Catherine Hahn, who I'm sure you are familiar with. Most recently, Marvel fans will know her as Agatha from WandaVision, and apparently she's got her own series coming soon.
Yes.
And one of my
Coven of Chaos or something.
Yes, and actually one of my classmates, Maria Dizia from UCSD, is apparently going to be on that show, which is really exciting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, as
House,
one of
House of Harkness. My research team, my brain remembered it's House of Harkness.
Ah, okay, very good. Yeah, and I think Maria is going to be part of the coven in some fashion. And
cool.
Anyway, I just remember Catherine Hahn did her showcase with she was doing her showcase for Yale while we were doing our UCSD, and it was just like she emerged fully formed as a star. Like you saw that woman do her showcase, and you're like, that's a star. Like, I honestly feel like she got entrance applause. It was so good.
Huh.
And anyway, so I then had a number of meetings in L.A. with agents and was really hoping, like, oh, you know, because part of why I had gone out to California for my MFA was like, let's cut out the middleman. I want to be in movies. Let's go to school in California where they make the movies. And even though I had always been sort of enamored of the idea of being a New York actor, specifically that thing of being a New York actor, I also had that sort of pipe dream of I want to go to LA and I want to be I want to be in pictures, right? So
yeah,
there were those two things going on. And so I had a number of meetings, and LA kind of did a sort of a general shrug about me, sort of a collective shrug. Like, we don't quite know what to do with this guy. And, you know, I remember I had a meeting with this old salty agent by the name of J. Michael Bloom. And I think he's passed on since, but he's like central casting for like your kind of, you kind of picture him with a cigar in his mouth, kind of an agent guy. And he very famously discovered Alec Baldwin. And yeah. And at the time, I'd had a couple of people sort of liken me to Alec Baldwin at that time in my life. A couple of people had sort of said, oh, you kind of have an Alec Baldwin vibe. And, you know, I was fine with that. I loved Alec Baldwin's work. And anyway, so I was sitting there. I had this meeting after the showcase. I got called in for a meeting with J. Michael Bloom, and he was doing his own thing. He had a new agency, and I remember he was like, he was kind of like, listen, kid, you know, here you are, you're in L.A., you know, you're good looking, but you're not quite good looking enough. You know, you're in shape, but you're not quite in shape enough. You're funny, but you're not quite funny enough. So I kind of want you to go. I want you to go to the gym. I want to get you look right. I want you to work with the groundlings and get your comedy right. I want you to, you know, and then come back and maybe, you know, we can talk. And he said something like, and you may say, you know what, Bloom, you're full of it. I don't care if you discovered Alec Baldwin. You don't know what you're talking about. But trust me, I know what I'm talking about. And I just remember sitting there like, this is the most L.A. thing that has ever happened to me. I love this right now. This is amazing. Even though he's insulting me in a low-key way, it was just so funny. And that was sort of the thing. You know, you're good looking, but you're not good looking enough. You're funny, but you're not quite funny enough. And L.A. just did a kind of a collective shrug. And I got a couple of meetings like that, which was sort of like, get more handsome or get more funny, or ideally both, and then come back and talk to me again. And then meanwhile in New York, I had a couple of agencies, particularly one that was like ready to sign me. Let's start working right away, you know. And this sort of mystique of being a New York actor came back and kicked back in. People, you know, of course, like your Al Pacinos and your De Niros, but then also the sort of, it's funny because now they're a little older, but like a younger guard, like Stanley Tucci was somebody I really, really looked up to. And I remember seeing that film, The Day Trippers, if you've ever seen that, it's a great movie. Ann Mira, Stanley Tucci, Hope Davis, Parker Posey, Liev Schreiber. And there's just a moment, and I don't want to, it's a pretty major spoiler, but there's a moment that Stanley Tucci has in that film where I just remember I saw it at the Angelica, that wonderful theater downtown. Mm-hmm. And I just remember watching his work, and he has this explosive moment. I was like, oh, my God, I need to be a New York actor. This is what I need to do. Mm-hmm. You know, and so coming back here made a lot of sense. And came back and began began my career.
Now you did do a lot of stage work during that time, both in New York on Broadway, And you also did a lot of touring shows as well. Which, you know, so if you don't mind, just give us a couple highlights, just a couple notable roles, because we have about 20 minutes left, and there's a few more things I want to get on, get to, including this past week for you. So, yeah, just what were some of the your notable peaks as far as some of the shows that you're the most proud of, specifically when you, you know, the one you did in New York?
Yeah, sure. So I would say, you know, very early on in my career, I had the opportunity to work at Playwrights Horizons on a show called The World Over, where I got to understudy terrific actor Justin Kirk in this leading role. And I was meant to fill in for him on one, maybe two occasions over the course of the run, because he was shooting the role of Prior Walter in Mike Nichols' HBO Films production of Angels in America. And he was going to be definitely missing. So I was, you know, lucky enough to get that gig and brought in. And then I think two nights before they opened, Justin got injured on stage. And I had to literally jump in for the second act and play the role. And it was just one of those actor's dream slash actor's nightmare moments. And that was an amazing opportunity. I got to do a lot of that run. And Justin did come back by the end of the run. He literally, he had sprained his ankle really badly. It was a very physical kind of swashbuckling show. He had sprained his ankle really bad, jumping over the pit of fire, as one does. And he did come back for those final couple of performances, literally on crutches to the edge of the stage, get on stage, leave the crutches behind, come back, grab them. So that was the kind of commitment that that guy had, and he's a great actor. So that, you know, followed that up with a couple of regional gigs, and then was lucky enough to be part of the company of King Lear, starring the late, great Christopher Plummer on Broadway at Lincoln Center, directed by Jonathan Miller, and was the only member of the New York company, because this was a production that had originated at the Stratford Festival in Canada and come down, transferred to Broadway. I was the only member of the New York company that actually had a scene with Christopher Plummer, which was, again, one of the highlights of my career, one of the highlights of my life, just to be able to be up there and share the stage with that man and that voice and that energy and just his incredible performance as Lear. And he would just, you know, played one of his knights, small role, but it was a role. And, you know, talking to him about how I feel that he's being disrespected by his daughters and how, you know, he's not getting treated in the way he should. And I had to sort of be the one that the other knights kind of pushed forward, like, tell him, you know. And I said, you know, I think your highness has been disrespected. And he would just turn to me with those Christopher Plummer eyes and say, sayest thou so, you know, and we would start this little scene. And again, just a tremendous opportunity. And then I was able to be selected to bring out Cordelia with him at the end. Usually, you know, Lear is played by a much younger guy. He was already in his 70s. So a lot of times they will carry the Cordelia in their arms, but that wasn't an option. So she was in this terrible sort of winding cloth. And I would, he was pulling her, but it was really more that I was pushing the body. It was the actress herself in there. And, you know, got to come out for that final moment while he's howling to the heavens about his dead daughter. And I just remember being like, I should not be on stage. Like I was right there, right behind him. And I remember Jonathan Miller said, you know, well, maybe you turn away from the horror. And so I literally would turn my back. Like I just couldn't look. And it solved it beautifully because nobody wanted to be looking at me. They wanted to be looking at him, you know. But the way that Miller, who was just this brilliant Brit, just was able to, you know, maybe you just need to turn away from the horror, is how he put it. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's amazing. So that was amazing. That was cool. And then, you know, trying to think of just a sort of the Cliff Notes version, got to do a wonderful and significant revival of Landscape of the Body by John Guare, directed by Michael Greif, starring the awesome Lily Taylor and Sherry Renee Scott, and Paul Sparks, who's gone on to have a tremendous career doing a lot of different stuff. And that was amazing. That was with music done by my wonderful friend, the late, great Michael Friedman from The Civilians, a company I worked with a lot in the early days of my career. Listeners might know Michael as the composer of Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, which was on Broadway. And a tremendous talent that we lost way too soon. And followed that up, I would say the other big, next big thing would be the Coast of Utopia trilogy. And we had a wonderful 9 or 10 months running that on Broadway. And Tom Stoppard was with us every step of the way, which was just, I mean, it was just a dream. I had seen you do The Real Thing at Adelphi, and that was one of my first exposures to Stoppard, and I just loved it. I had read Arcadia and Travesties, and just I was so awed by him that I was the last member of the company to introduce myself to him. I was just so awestruck. I was so starstruck that I think it was 2 weeks into rehearsals before I got the gumption to come across that gulf of the rehearsal room to say hello. And he was such a great guy that as I approached him, he started to laugh. And he goes in that just, you know, that inimitable Stoppard way. No. He said, don't. I want to see if we can make it to first night without meeting. You know, the British call it first night instead of opening night. And I was just like, I'm sorry, Tom. I said, I'm just such a fan. It's just been hard. But and we just kind of laughed about it. And he was just such a wonderful guy. And that was such a big hit. It was such an amazing thing. You know, Barbara Cook, the great musical theater performer, was doing a concert at Lincoln Center when we were doing King Lear. And I remember she had this great line where she said, if you ever get a chance to be in a hit, take it. And it was just, it's so true. It was so great to be a part of that. And you know, Billy Crudup and Ethan Hawke and Amy Irving, Martha Plimpton, Brian O'Byrne, this tremendous cast, 9 hours of theater. You could come see all three parts in one day. My dad did come to see the marathon directed by Jack O'Brien. Tremendous, tremendous. And I remember talking to Tom as he was smoking one of his cigarettes outside the stage door. When we, you know, really, it was clear that this thing was a big hit. And I said, hey, Tom, how you doing? And he's like, I'm all right. And he said, do you know, busload of people came here to see the show from Ohio today. Ohio. And I said, well, Tom, you know, it's kind of a big deal to people. And he goes, it's becoming that, isn't it? And it was just so sweet and dear, you know, and just so like that he just didn't have arrogance. He was just like, wow. He was wowed by people coming from all the way from the provinces, you know, all the way from Ohio on a bus to see this thing. So that was great.
Humbleness from one of the greatest playwrights of our time, too.
Isn't that beautiful?
So beautiful. That's great.
Yeah.
It's funny. If I ever returned to acting, you know, I definitely wanted to be with you, and it would be, you know, I would want to do two shows, Brian. I would want to do Rosencrantz, the Guild of Sinner Dead, right?
Yes.
That's a Tom Stoppard winner, one of my favorite plays. And we've talked about this, The Odd Couple. I would love to do The Odd Couple. I'd love to do how they used to do it, too. Matthau and Carney, and then I think later Lemon, they would switch roles.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't ever know who you were going to get.
That would be great.
According to my dad, and both would have to be directed by Doug Gipple. That is
absolutely. And speaking of Doug Gipple, only Tom Stoppard could have kept me from seeing Doug's final show, which he recently did at Ramsey High School. I wasn't able to see it; I was working. And then the one night I could have gone, we had tickets to see Leopold Stott. And that was a gift from my blushing bride to me for Valentine's Day, actually. And I was not able to be at Doug's performance because we already had those tickets. But again, only Stoppard could have kept me from seeing that. And, you know, Doug being such a significant figure in my life. But yeah, you know, I know we're on a tight schedule. So, you know, after Coast of Utopia, you know, I had a nice little gig doing the Broadway company of Merchant of Venice starring Al Pacino, covering the role of Bassanio and covering Lorenzo as well. Covering in Bassanio the wonderful David Harbour, of course, who's now gone on to big stardom. And
the Hellboy remake.
Exactly. That's the one for the book.
It's a reboot, not a remake.
And got to go on one night in one of the smaller roles I was understudying and have some a little moment on stage with the great Mr. Pacino, which was a kind of a dream come true. And you know, in terms of other big significant things, I got to do a significant revival of The Iceman Cometh starring Nathan Lane and Brian Dennehy, which had originated at the Goodman in Chicago and then transferred a few years, this was 2015, to BAM, Brooklyn Academy of Music. So I got to slap handcuffs on Nathan Lane each night there for a couple of months. That was an incredible experience. And it's, you know, funny, spending a lot of time in the lobby waiting because my entrance didn't come on till about like 4 hours into the show, just seeing how much people drank during the intervals of that show, and there were two of them, actually
right.
three of them. How much people drank in a show about the horrors of alcoholism was really surprising to me. It never ceased to amuse me. People were just like, I need a freaking drink to deal with this horrible show about how lives are ruined by alcohol. Yeah, it just made me laugh. But then, you know, from that point on, 2015, around that time, it's sort of doing kind of less acting and more teaching, which is something I've discovered that I truly, truly love and, you know, has been a really wonderful kind of second act for me, if you will, as I've gotten involved with teaching at my alma mater, Wagner, which we talked about before, and have been an adjunct for 10 years.
Wagner is the Adelphi of Staten Island, by the way.
That's right. That's what they call it. And, you know, I had been serving as an adjunct there for about 10 years. And then this past year landed a full-time gig, one that I've been trying to get for quite some time. And as a visiting assistant professor of theater and have just recently found out that I have been renewed in a tenure-track position, which is a huge deal, yeah, for next year. So thanks, man. And this past year will count towards my tenure, so the tenure clock has already started. I'm going to year two of my tenure track, and you know, it's a five-year process, so we're going to do our best.
Yeah.
So we're going to see how things
that's
go.
That's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thanks,
you are still, while being a teacher, you are still able to be a working actor. You have very extensive credits on IMDb. One thing I did notice, though, I think I actually do have the oldest IMDb credit, 1999 or 2000, Peril with Michael Paré.
And Morgan Fairchild, right?
And yes, Morgan Fairchild. But every time I say I'm in a movie with Morgan Fairchild, I always feel like I'm that John Lovitz character from Saturday Night Live, the liar, right?
And Morgan Fairchild.
Yes,
that's
my one and only IMDb credit, although for a brief period, April of last year, I was on IMDb attached to be playing David Duchovny's son in the upcoming Bucky F. and Dent that he wrote and directed and also stars in. One of my favorite novels of the last few years. David Duchovny was also apparently a fan of my father's, so I think somebody made those wires cross. But no, I'm not in that movie, but I've heard great things about that movie, so I'm recommending that movie.
Love
David,
it.
If you're listening, you're always welcome to come on the show. But you had some really extensive credits, and you have pretty much been on every, you know, long-running and popular show that films in the New York area, Law and Order, New Amsterdam was one that you were recently on.
Mm-hmm.
You did two episodes of Blue Bloods.
Yeah.
Some fantastic work. And this past Thursday night, I know I talked about it on my Thursday night edition of the Pep Talk, that you were on The Blacklist, which it looks like sometimes features James Spader.
Yes.
And this episode specifically was directed by Andrew McCarthy. You play Adam Rose, the architect of the Capitol. Do we have a clip? No. No, we don't have a clip tonight, but I do have to ask you, first of all, great job.
Thank you.
You had that swagger, right? You were in charge until you were stymied, maybe.
Totally.
Maybe. We're going to ask you about that in a second. And you were, I don't think I've ever seen you better lit in both scenes. I guess you had more than one scene, which is fantastic.
It was nice,
really well lit show. I like how it's lit, that show.
Beautifully shot, beautifully lit. Yeah.
Yeah. Only episode I've seen. And I guess a penultimate episode. I think there's one more episode left before it's over.
I got in right under the wire. Exactly.
You did. Just like Law and Order, the first go around.
Yes.
They were like, we got every actor in New York. Oh, wait, this guy. We got to get this guy. And then we should shut our doors for a little bit. And so my question is about Adam Rose, architect of the Capitol, the secret life of the character, Brian.
Yes.
Seems like he may know more than he's letting on. So Adam Rose, Brian, architect of the Capitol or architect of the conspiracy?
Touche. He knows nothing. He is a stuffed shirt, and he was completely gobsmacked and totally humiliated. You know, he is not part of a larger conspiracy. I wish he was part of a larger conspiracy, but no, just a dope. Just a huffy bureaucrat, a completely fictional. Clearly, this is fiction. Just a complete stuffed shirt bureaucrat with nothing really going on up there. Yeah, he was totally gobsmacked and embarrassed by that moment.
And on that note,
okay, good.
We have less than about 4 minutes to go.
Yes, exactly, Yes,
Brian,
it was very convincing. I definitely read, but I wanted to know. Brian. So we, as Hercules said, we really are running out of time here. So I really would love to have you back on, and we can go in a little more detail about the back half of your career thus far. And I really do want to talk a little bit more about navigating fatherhood with this life, because your greatest creation is your son, like all good acting projects. It is a collaborative effort, and yes, your blushing bride, who is also an actress. You guys are phenomenal parents, and that Mr. Man is a little dynamo, and I love that guy, and I definitely look forward to spending more time with him, and spending more time with you as well. If you want to come back on, I'd love to have you back on.
Sure.
And maybe we can even do something with Bart too, or even my friend Matthew Demick, who was able to help me out on Thursday night, backing up Marty, which I realized just recently. I remembered recently that a pivotal connection in my life that you and Matt were present for, that I believe you wrote as a play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe we can dust that off and do a little dramatic reading of a short play at some point in the future. But
I'll do a deep dive into the cold storage to see if I can find that.
You know who has it? Bart has it. Bart absolutely has it. There's no doubt, because Bart I think has everything that anyone has ever produced and created in our circle. We're very fascinating conversation, and again, thank you for being who you are. Thank you for being on the show, but thank you for being a great friend. I know you've stood by me when I was messing up, and your friendship is one of those things, along with many others, that I care about and have cared about me, that helped me be a better person when I was, after a period of when I just wasn't. So I'm always grateful for you for that. And I guess, the one thing I just want to say, man, is best of luck. Congratulations on all your success, and keep moving forward. I'm also telling people that's you playing Jay Garrick at the end of the Flash movie, because I always think that is a role that you'd be perfect for. And I think, Brian, I think I just want to leave us with something that the late Jacques Burdick, another Yaley, who was one of my professors at Adelphi, he would always start every class with the phrase, "First I honor life, and with it my life in the theater. And Brian, you honor life, and with it your life in the theater. Thank you very much, Brian. God bless you. Best to you and your family. Folks, this has been the Pep Talk. Have a wonderful 4th of July. We will see you next month, first Sunday of the month. I'm John Carl Yastrzemski on the Facebook. Come visit me at the Joker's Shot in Fairlawn, New Jersey. Happy Independence Day, America.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Hercules.
Thanks, Hercules.